Jersey Love Dovecast. I'm Johnny. He's George. Lots to talk about this week. Less so than last week. Not the craziness that we've experienced in the past two or three weeks. Slightly calmer, but still important news to discuss and dissect. So let's go ahead and just get started with football. A sport that we've neglected a little bit in lieu of basketball being exciting briefly and then, you know, not exciting. But we'll talk about that in a second. But since spring practice continues and there's a lot of ins and outs, a lot of analysis to be had, a lot of comings and goings when it comes to coaches.
More stripes let's go coming ahead. Off helmets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, black stripes coming off helmets. Let's go ahead and start with some of the observations that have been going on with the players for Ohio State, especially the new guys. And, you know, there was Student Appreciation Day, which is always a really cool event. And honestly, I would have killed for something like that when I was in college. That would have been, I think, an extremely hot ticket. It would have been really, really cool to have been able to be a part of something like that. But we've got some observations from that from our beat guys. We got Andy and Dan on the case. First of all, just everything that we have seen from Jeremiah Smith, I mean, it feels like every new guy is the next best guy that's ever been in Ohio State, but Jeremiah Smith genuinely seems like more polished than even a guy like Marvin Harrison or like, you know, Olave or any of these other dudes were when they were just arriving on campus. I mean, this is a guy who should still be in high school. And yet he seems like he's the number one dude. So it's just kind of amazing. Like some of the catches, some of the grabs he's making, the one in particular where he just, you know, kind of just snatched it from a millimeter off the turf. He's the real deal, man. And I know that's a stupid thing to say, right? After some practice observations and video, but based on everything that we're hearing from the coaches and his teammates, it seems like he's going to be a bona fide threat.
It certainly shakes up what's already a very crowded wide receiver room at Ohio State.
Right.
I hope Brandon Ennis is taking it in stride.
Yeah. Well, and witness, right, a transfer out of that room, right? Because I think the writing was kind of on the wall where it's like, all right, well, there are limited spots. There's only one football that can be thrown. How was this going to be distributed? And when you got to have a guy like Jeremiah coming in, I think it becomes pretty evident that he's going to get a lot of those passing attempts, you know, thrown his way during the season because that guy just he will have to be on the field.
It's going to be hard to keep him off the field. I don't know if I wouldn't anoint him the number one guy yet based on what two.
Yeah, three I mean weeks to be fair, practice. There's still
we
right,
still
exactly.
have Ibuka. That guy's yeah. pretty good, right?
Yeah, so I've heard. Yeah, you still got Ibuka, you still got, you know, Ennis and you've got a lot of guys out there who, are, you know, going to be having some things to say about that, but, I'm just excited about it. I think that's super awesome. Now, the other thing is, and I'm curious about your thoughts on this. So a lot of praise, I think, for Devin Brown as he kind of like rehabs and whatnot. It looks like he's sharper and all that stuff. Will Howard, who has had the black stripe removed, so that's good, officially, you know, quote unquote a Buckeye, maybe not as impressive, according to some of our reporting that we've done, and especially in comparison to, you know, the other quarterbacks. So Dan wrote that Howard, quote, had arguably the worst day among the four quarterbacks on Saturday, at least in terms of throwing the deep ball where he struggled with his accuracy. We just talked up these wide receivers. Is that the guy? I mean, I know we talked about like, you know, Jared Allen and Scarlett and Gray, but is this the guy that you want throwing to these insane, you know, wide receivers? Is that,
no.
I mean, is that a concern?
No.
So no, you're just straight up. No.
Yeah. I mean, look, you,
that's fair. That's a take.
The guy is what, a fifth year senior at this point.
Yeah. I mean, basically.
He's a finished product. You know what you're right. going to get with that. And you know, he's a big quarterback that offers some pressure on the defense relative to his ability to run the ball. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, your main job as a quarterback is to distribute the ball effectively to as many levels of the field as you can, especially mm-hmm. at a place like Ohio State where you have the receiving talent that's able to come down with the ball at all levels of the field. you don't have a quarterback that is going to make those accurate throws and make the most of the talent, then you're not going to be able to beat the best teams, which is exactly what happened down the stretch last season for Ohio State when they tried to invest in Kyle McCord. Mm-hmm. So I am, if the early returns are this guy is not going to be able to hit the levels of the field that they need with consistency to make the most of the talent that they have. I mean, you're seeing that problem that Ohio State had last year reflected now in the evaluation of Marvin Harrison Jr. in the upcoming NFL draft, because the narrative that has emerged is that the gap between Marvin Harrison Jr. and the receivers that at LSU has significantly narrowed now to the point that apparently some GMs are considering maybe the talent over Harrison, in spite of the fact that those two LSU receivers had Jaden Daniels throwing to him last year, and Marvin Harrison Jr. had the guy that is now at Syracuse.
Right.
So it's very frustrating that, you know, that we're sort of hurtling towards another scenario similar to the one that we were lamenting going into the season last year, which was we were worried about whether they were going to commit to McCord or Devin Brown as the starter prior to the start of the season. And it took them two full games, the Indiana game and then the Youngstown State game, to still figure out what they really wanted to do. And it wasn't until the Notre Dame game that they had finally named a starter. Mm-hmm. And we were very grateful for Kyle McCord's performance at the time. I think it kind of gets lost in the overall evaluation of his time at Ohio State now relative to how things ended. Right. But he's still like, you know, he had a very clutch ending to the game. But in light of how Notre Dame's entire performance through the entirety of the season went, it didn't necessarily reflect on like how great Ohio State's offense could be against the top teams in college football. And that ended up coming home to roost against Michigan. And I'm worried that we're kind of hurtling towards a similar situation now with the current quarterback.
Right. So my question then is, do you think that if they end up, let's say Will Howard, you know, doesn't cut the mustard and they're like, all right, we're not going to pick this guy. And I don't, you know, that would suck, I think, for Will Howard, but I don't have any real, like, you know, I wouldn't be crying for a guy who's like, all right, I'm going to hit the transfer portal and, you know, apply my trade at Ohio State. I mean, that's the risk that you take. But if they end up picking Devin Brown, okay, do you think that is a step backward? Or should they, like, in other words, is that the safe play, or should they be looking to the future with a guy like, you know, Sayan?
No, I don't think it's a safe play at all. Not because of Brown's level of talent, but just because of what his history of health has been. The guy got compromised twice last season, and in the situation where they committed to him being the starter and he got hurt, you very transparently saw that Kainholz was not prepared. Because they didn't give him enough starting reps going into the Cotton Bowl, and the entire offense suffered for it. So you're looking at another situation where if you commit to that guy that has that kind of running, not necessarily run first, but it at least is a big part, similarly to Howard, of the threat that he provides defense. Yeah.
Similar mentality.
Yeah, and the guy's history of health has shown that it's not going to hold up against, you know, playing consistently against defenses when you're implementing that style. I think his Cotton Bowl injury was a little bit of a freak occurrence, to be fair, but the guy injured himself at least once, if not multiple times last year when they were trying to have him operate in that kind of red zone quarterback role that they were experimenting with early in the season. And then a little bit more later on, I think, in blowouts, even after they had McCord established as the starter. Now, I would be okay with having Howard operate in a role like that if they're really committed to trying to get some kind of change of pace role as mm-hmm. they figure out what the most effective way for the quarterback room is. But you have the two guys that are presumably at the front of the competition right now, both are relatively finished products. And even we didn't even necessarily see great consistency from Brown's arm last year. And even though he established himself as the guy that should be starting for the Cotton Bowl after McCord left, but he still lost the competition to McCord.
Right.
And McCord offered absolutely nothing on the feet, just was a pure pocket passer. And they still felt more comfortable with McCord just on the basis that he was going to be able to make throws more consistently than Brown was. So you're choosing between two, not necessarily run first, but hybrid threat quarterbacks that don't have the greatest consistency in terms of being able to hit all levels of the field. Those are not the guys that are going to be able to make the most of the talent in the receiving room. And you compare that to someone like Sayin, who was in a similar position to Will Howard relative to looking from the outside in and seeing the state of Ohio State's quarterback room and thinking, I can go in there and, you know, compete for that job and potentially have a future there. Howard at least has the seniority argument, but we know what kind of a field general that guy is at this point. The ceiling for Sayin is phenomenally higher, and, you know, to the point of quoting our illustrious Dan Hope, Dan had to say in that same article about what he said about Howard. Sayin also had an impressive day showing the ability to throw the ball with accuracy and zip to all levels of the field as he appears to have separated himself from fellow freshman Nolan with the potential to continue climbing the depth chart. Now, I know I've been saying since last year, Air Nolan 2024, but my argument for that has mainly been the basis of going with the guy that putting a quarterback guru like Ryan Day, giving him a prospect that has time to develop and has the highest ceiling possible.
Yeah, the highest potential is what you're looking
for. Yeah, and getting the most out of that guy as opposed to giving starting reps to someone who is already a finished product at this point. And I feel that's more the case with Will Howard than it is with Devin Brown, but for the sake of getting the most out of this offense, I would think that you have to go with a guy like Sayin as opposed to Devin Brown, more based on his health than his talent, but then also because we kind of know what Will Howard is at this point. If you still want to get something out of Howard, given the position that he's in and the talent that he does have, you should probably have him playing the role that Devin Brown does. So
yeah, I mean,
that's just the way that I look at it in March.
Right. Now, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know what Will Howard's going to look like over the course of the summer. Obviously this is a decision that they're going to be making, you know, in the latter stages of, you know, summer camp or fall camp in August, right? This is not a quarterback, you know, decision that they're going to be making here in the middle of April.
The guy's not going to turn into Peyton Manning in like 3 months.
I don't think he will either. And that's where it becomes really interesting because like, reps, right? Like the reps are the biggest thing, and you got to be able to develop a rapport with the receivers. You got to get the timing down right. I mean, all of that matters, and all of that happens like now. So it is incredibly interesting to me to see how they're going to kind of process this, because if Will Howard comes in and he's underwhelming, I mean, you've invested a lot of time and money to, you know, bring this guy to Columbus, but also you're trying to win national championships, and like, You can't be beholden to like the sunk cost fallacy and be like, well, you know, we brought him here, so we got to play him. Like, nah, you actually don't. You can just play the best guy. And I don't know if that's Julian Sayin. I don't know if that's the dude. And if it is Will Howard and he takes care of all the other things that you have to have as a quarterback, I mean, there's still a lot that goes into it. Then fine, start the guy. But my point is, though, is that I do agree with you in the idea that, like, you know, if one of these guys is clearly better, has a higher potential, and is going to get you to the promised land, then you got to roll with that person. And it doesn't really matter who it is, because you've got five quarterbacks in there right now, and you got to pick one of them. And you might as well go with the guy that you believe has the highest potential and the most likely chance to get you to where you want to go, which starts with beating Michigan. So a couple things I want to mention beyond the quarterback competition. 16-star weekend, Ohio State brought in 4 4-star recruits. Defensive end London Merritt committed to Ohio State. Take that, anybody saying, you know, LJ's fallen off. 4-star linebacker Tarvos Alford has committed to Ohio State. Safety Deshaun Stewart, and then 4-star wide receiver DZ Jones. I like it. I, you know, look, 2025, you know, it feels like that's such a long ways away, especially given the fact that there is another transfer window opening up in just a few weeks. So it's like, it's hard to get excited about somebody that could flip several times before they actually, you know, potentially play for Ohio State. But still, these are really good pickups, and it just adds to what is, you know, already a really, really good class. You know, London Merritt, I think right now is just outside the top 100, but Tarvos Alford is, you know, 63 nationally. DZ Jones is 360 something, but you know, whatever. It's still really high, ranked recruit. I don't know. I mean, it's cool to see that these guys, even in the midst of, you know, some shakeups and the coaching staff and all that kind of stuff, is still, you know, still having an impact. So I think that's cool.
Another thing I want to talk about, Larry Johnson's demise get exaggerated every year at this point. The guy's one of the best in the business.
Yeah, well, we wants to do it.
This is kind of an important year though, because I do think that, you know, JT Tuimoloau and Sawyer have been, if not underwhelming, at least inconsistent in their production.
Probably the best way to put it.
Through their careers here, but Sawyer was on his way to having one of the best games in like Ohio State history, like again in the Cotton Bowl, and like almost single-handedly held Missouri like in check while the offense
like 0 points provide for 3 quarters.
Yeah. Right. They, I mean, but that nobody remembers it because the narrative coming out of that game was Brown got hurt. Kainholz wasn't prepared, not, you know, his fault, but you know, the team just kind of wasn't really in the position to compete that it perhaps should have been, or just didn't really take it as seriously relative to what their goals had been going into the season. So it's, you know, it's just kind of a game that gets forgotten, which is unfortunate for him. Because, you know, we all remember the game Tuimoloau had at Penn State the last time he was in Happy Valley. So he's
right, but that
he's
was
got
win,
his signature.
So we're
going to
remember it.
Right. But even then last season, I felt like he was, you know, very inconsistent relative to coming off of that performance. Sure. So I think, you know, the pass rush is definitely going to have to step up from what, you know, what the recent results have been relative to consistency across the whole season. But in terms of like people that have been clamoring for Larry Johnson to retire and get new blood, it's like, this guy is still one of the best in the business. Yeah, and he's still getting very, very good talent for Ohio State. Agreed. I don't know why you would want to move off that. You don't run from success, and Larry Johnson is full of it.
Yeah. Speaking of coaching, Ohio State just hired Oregon's running backs coach Carlos Lachlan to replace Tony Alford. You know, I don't know anything about this dude. The early returns, the things that I've seen from other people is that he's a really good recruiter, high energy guy. It's kind of what you expect out of a running backs coach. I'm just glad that they got somebody. Honestly, I feel like this had been going on for a while without a running backs coach. So hopefully they can get him installed and ready to go ASAP, because that was a pretty big hole to have in your coaching staff. I'm glad they were able to fill that up. And, you know, it kind of like, it sucks to lose your running backs coach to Michigan. I do like that they poached from another Big Ten team, which is kind of funny to me. So, you know, there's no little love lost there, I'm sure. But everything I've seen from the guy, or at least, you know, again, in the very early preliminary reports, seems that he'll be a good fit, and I think should slot in pretty well with this coaching staff. So I'm,
I don't know if he was there when Ohio State played Oregon in 2021, but Ohio State got absolutely killed by Oregon's running backs in that game.
Yeah.
So I, you know,
and they've been good. Their running backs have been good. He was at Western Kentucky in 2021. You know, he's a guy that I think people like in the locker room. you know, like I said, all the, these are all, you know, ephemeral. Like, it's not like I have any solid reporting or anything like that, but just the tweets and the comments and the message board posts, it seems like he was a pretty positive presence. So I'm excited about that.
I'm sure Chip Kelly will enjoy him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he will too. Okay. Let's talk real quick basketball. You know, men's basketball, they lose a heartbreaker to Georgia at the Shot. They're out of the NIT. That kind of sucks. You know, it was what it was. Like, they had a chance to win it at the very end. They just couldn't get it to go. Battle just, you know, it didn't fall. I think if you're looking for reasons to be optimistic about next season for Ohio State men's basketball, you found a few in the last, you know, couple weeks here. And look, I'm not super convinced quite yet that Diebler is the guy to lead him to the promised land, but it's not because I think he's a bad coach or anything like that. I just, as I've said, there's just so little evidence, but team definitely played better in a lot of respects. They've got some interesting holes that they'll have to field. Felix Okpara coming back is helpful to that. Scotty Milton leaving is not, and it'll be interesting to see what they do in the portal, because they're going to have to try to make up, you know, some lost production, particularly with Battle leaving, and Middleton, who I think, you know, had the chance to be a, you know, kind of a breakout offensive player for them. There's been some rumors about Michi maybe coming back. I don't know. I mean, that would be fine. I don't think he would be some kind of like transformational player for them, but he would definitely be a piece. But they've got some work to do, and this is the part that's hard. This is the part that we were talking about, where it's like, it's one thing to be a really good coach, but you also have to be able to run a program. And now we're going to see if Jake Diebler can do that part of it, which is, again, I think probably the more difficult part.
It's kind of funny that, you know, Holtman got lambasted for not being able to get portal talent, and, you know, Jameson Battle had the season that he did for Ohio State.
He was great. He was fantastic for Ohio State. Yeah.
Well, it was perish the thought all season for me of like, what does this team look like if Battle isn't there? Kind of the same story in the Georgia game. Cause the guy was not only one of the best 3-point shooters in the Big Ten, he was clearly the best 3-point shooter on the team. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the second best 3-point shooter on the team down the stretch was Middleton. The team is about to lose basically the only two consistently reliable 3-point shooters that it had all season. And because Gale took a huge step back from the season he had prior, just relative to perimeter shooting. Like you just said, even if Michi comes back, he doesn't really solve that issue. So this is going to be a team that, at least looking at next season right now, I don't know where they're going to get their perimeter shooting from.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really am worried about that. I mean, they're going to need Tyson Chapman to take a huge step.
I hope Colin White can come in and start bombing it, I guess. That's, you know.
But I really, really am, you know, Battle bailed this team all season out of some really difficult spots with some insane bombs from deep that were able to stop bleeding. Yeah. And it was the same story against Georgia, and the team unfortunately just had to lean on that too much, I think, in too many different spots. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing in the Illinois game. He had an opportunity to tie the game late too with a three that just didn't quite go down. There was another game, I think, Tim, escaping me right now, but I think he had to hit a huge three against Cornell even when the team was losing with 45 seconds left in the game to put them ahead. So there were so many games this year where the result just hinged on, is Battle gonna bail us out with a shot from deep or not? And he did a lot of times, but You need more perimeter threats than that in order to consistently succeed. And they didn't have Middleton the whole NIT. So not having your second best perimeter shooter down the stretch, obviously, is going to create some heartache. I mean, you really need those threats to succeed in basketball, especially because the narrative for so much of Ohio State in my adult life has been teams that live or die by the three. And we're going to need to see Diebler go out and be super aggressive in the portal and find guys that are going to be able to hit from deep. And I just don't, I don't know how many of those players that fill that role there are. I feel good about Thornton going into next year. I don't enjoy watching Roddy Gale play basketball, but I'm going to have to bite the bullet and do it for at least another year next year.
Yeah.
I'm very relieved Okpara is coming back, but I think I agree with you that it would have been more a relief to see Middleton return than to see Okpara come back. And
you need the shooting, and that's the biggest thing for me. Yeah. Like, again, Ohio State hasn't had an inside presence in forever, and I know Okpara gives you that sometimes, but he also fouls out, right? Like, how long do you get him for? You'll get him for 10 minutes, and then he's in foul trouble, and you're like, okay, great, now what do we do?
But this team for so long has leaned on, like, even going back to Mata, like, has just leaned on undersized big men.
Yes.
Awkward lefties forever. And to get someone like Okpara, who's a legit 7-footer that can be an interior presence like that, it's a relief.
If he can stay out of foul trouble, he can be incredibly impactful in games. And I'm not saying you got to be Zach Edey, but, like, just, you know, again, versatile, right? Versatility is what I think Ohio State really needs. They can't be a one-note team. And when they get in trouble is when they, I think, start to, like, they start to get paranoid that they've revealed the fact that they are a one note team, and then they just start hucking threes. I'm like, oh crap, we got to shoot ourselves back into this, and that doesn't work. And so I want a more complete team, I guess is maybe a better word for that, especially, you know, when you're watching the NCAA tournament and you're watching a team that, you know, any of the teams that are left, say nothing in the Final Four, but even the Elite Eight, they can score from anywhere. And you've got guys who can just bang inside. I mean, looking at Illinois, for example, Illinois, obviously, they're not in the, you know, they've been bounced, but, like, the fact that they could go inside with Danger and then, like, shoot on the outside with, like, four other guys, with Terrence Shannon, like, that, first of all, it was kind of remarkable that Ohio State was able to take that team down to the wire anyway, but also, just that is the kind of team that I think I want Ohio State to be, where they look like they're a threat from any part of the court. And that just hasn't been the case for Ohio State in a long time. It feels like it's always been a very streaky team. It was always a very streaky team under Holtman in terms of shooting and what they're able to do. And when they were on, they were really dangerous. But when they weren't on, it's like they had no second gear whatsoever. And they've got to be able to find that under Jake Diebler. So I think, like you said, the transfer portal is going to be super important with that and developing some of the younger guys.
Yeah, and the margin for error for Diebler already is slim to none, because if he doesn't fill those needs that the team now has with the departures that are coming, I mean, the narrative against him immediately, particularly if Dusty May does well at Michigan, is going to be that Ohio State made a mistake, and the criticism is going to be very loud right away.
Right.
And you wonder how much pressure that's going to build on Ross Bjork as he officially becomes athletic director in 2 months, relative to, okay, do I go out and, like, need to make a new decision now that the trajectory for this team is on the decline? If they don't go and fill that perimeter shooting need right away, like, whether it comes from the incoming recruiting class or whether they go get guys in the portal like they probably need to right now, they are in trouble, I think. Yeah. And that's not necessarily any fault of Diebler's, but he's got an opportunity to prevent that from becoming an issue. I just see the criticism coming from very far off if it doesn't get rectified. And it'll just be interesting to see what happens between
now and
the
issue is some, like, hot shot, you know, Jay Wright says, no, I'm back. Like, you know, find me a team. I know that's not going to happen, but my point is that if Ohio State isn't doing so hot in a year or two, and all of a sudden, like, a really hot coaching candidate, you know, shows up on the market, it's going to be real hard for Ross Bjork to not, you know, make that choice. And so, you know, it's unfortunate for him because Diebler really does have to hit the ground running, because he does not have a lot of, I don't think he'll have a very long leash, I guess is what I'm saying.
And that's a big ask for a guy that's never had a full season as a 100%. Head coach.
100%. And again, that's not on that's not anything against Diebler. It's just it's the reality of the situation.
Yep.
All right, so that is the first part of our show. We want to remind you that the Dubcast is sponsored by the Dry Goods Store at 11warriors.com. Drygoods.11warriors.com. Shirts, hats, stickers, all kinds of stuff. Check it out. It's good stuff. Let's do Ask Us Anything. You can ask us literally anything by sending us questions to dubcast@11warriors.com. And I want to start with Kevin, who asked us a question that's kind of related to something we discussed a little bit earlier, which is, is Will Howard good enough for the football team to win a natty? Everybody, I don't know what this last sentence is. But anyway, everybody seems that they want to win the national championship. Can it be done with Will Howard at the helm?
Not right now.
You don't think so?
Not based
on... I think
on,
maybe.
Not based on... if no, not if you're not getting the most out of the talent in the receiver room, which it doesn't sound like this guy is doing right now in practice.
Here's why I say maybe, all right? Here's what I'll say. I don't think you need elite quarterback talent to win a national championship. I think you need an elite defense. I think you need to do something really well on offense and be consistent, but I don't think you have to have an elite quarterback. And I'll be honest, as much run as J.J. McCarthy is getting... he was not that great this past season.
What McCarthy did? He consistently made plays and consistently punished defenses for the mistakes that they made against Michigan's offense.
And that's fine, that is but it why was all facilitated. That was all facilitated by a running game that would get you a solid 4 to 5 yards every single down. And that they could rely on that. They didn't win a national championship because they had a great offense. Like, Michigan's offense was not that good last year. It wasn't, it was good, but it certainly wasn't like great by any stretch of the imagination. It was an average, like, you know, A level offense.
No, but I think McCarthy was a substantially better arm talent than Will Howard is. And that's my point is that if part of being a game manager is that you just consistently punish the defense for the mistakes that it makes at any level of the field.
Yeah,
and Howard has not demonstrated that he's that kind of guy.
I think if your defense is good enough and you score 30 points a game, you win a national championship. And that's essentially what Michigan did last year. They didn't have a defense or an offense that had to score 40 points a game. They barely were able to accomplish that against like Bowling Green, right? Like, they didn't need to do that because they had such an elite, dominant defensive line and secondary, and that was it. I mean, they didn't win. Like, if you watch those playoff games, did they win in shootouts? No, they won because they ground teams into fine powder, which then they, you know, snorted and I don't know, whatever. But my point, is that I do think it is plausible that he could do it. If he's a game manager, doesn't turn the ball over, facilitates a running game that we hope is elite, that would be enough to win a national championship if the defense is as good as we think it can be. I don't think, however, that that's what you want to bank on. If you can have a quarterback that is better than that, and let's say the defense isn't as elite as you might think it would be, or maybe the running game isn't as good as you would hope, then you don't want to just rely on a game manager to get you to where you want to go. So I'm agreeing with what you're saying overall about Howard. I'm just saying, if all other things pan out the way we hope it will for Ohio State, it's possible. I don't want to rely on that, but I'm just saying that it's not something that I think is out of the realm of possibility.
I don't feel good about it right now. We haven't seen this guy take a single snap as a Buckeye yet, so still a lot left to be written. But based on what the early returns are and what we – you know, we never saw this offense hit its ceiling last year that we really thought it could have relative to the talent that was right there, particularly in the receiving room. There's a new offensive coordinator, and the backfield talent, not just for running backs, but for quarterbacks in a Chip Kelly offense, obviously has to give you some reason for optimism. But if you really want to make the most out of that, you're going to need a quarterback that can hit different levels of the field with some level of consistency. And that, based on the early returns we're hearing, that's not what Howard offers. It was the inverse problem with McCord last year, where the guy had arm talent to hit the different levels, but he offered absolutely nothing as a running threat. So defenses were able to compensate right for that, knowing that they weren't going to be giving up shallow little, you know, chunk depth carries.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between those two and McCarthy is, McCarthy gave a little bit of everything, and playing that game, and he was able to thrive in that game manager role for Michigan to the point now that he might go in the top 10, which I think is really funny, but you know, we might get to that a little bit later in the show.
Well, actually we'll get to it very soon here in the next question.
All right, fair enough. But my point is, Will Howard not feeling it right now relative to national championship expectations.
Right. And I think that's fair too. I mean, again,
but we're still very early in the offseason, long way to go.
There's very little to go off of with him. All right, so this is from our good friend Alvin. This is about Michigan. Who has a tougher job next year, Sharon Moore or Dusty May?
Oh, definitely Sharon Moore.
Really?
100%.
Why do you say that?
Because Dusty May is coming off of Michigan's worst season in like the last, like, what, okay, 20 years?
I see what you're saying. Okay. So in terms Sharon of Moore
has to follow up a national championship.
Okay. Now that's
three straight
wins
over Ohio State.
That's a fair point. So from the perspective of like expectations, it's Sharon Moore.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think that's, so I would agree with that. I would think in terms of like who has the tougher coaching job, it's Dusty May, just given the talent that he has. But you're also right. Like, nobody expects him to win anything.
No, if Michigan flounders in basketball next year, it's like, oh, it's the first year of them rebuilding. It's whatever, you know.
Right. They lost Doug McDaniel.
They've got, yeah, right, they got time to dig themselves out of the hole. Right. There's like, if Michigan falls on its face in football next year, then suddenly there's a lot of credence that goes back to, oh, they were thriving off of cheating, mm-hmm, and having 44 seniors, which is never going to be replicated on any football team ever again.
I know. Right. Yeah, no, that's, I think that's a good point. What's going to happen with Michigan? I mean, the fact that they've got, you know, there's still another transfer portal, you know, opening up. I don't know if they're going to lose an additional guy. They lost Rod Moore because they got an ACL injury on the dude. Who knows when that guy's going to be coming back, but he was probably one of the, you know, top two or three players on that team. I mean, that really sucks for them. I'm not a guy who's going to cheer like, oh yeah, ACL injury. Like, that sucks. That really sucks. It's unfortunate for that dude, cause he was going to be, you know, one of the better players on that team. But there's, I don't know. I just think there's a lot of unknown still with Sharon Moore. And I know that people are, you know, people in Ann Arbor are probably heartened by his performances against Ohio State and Penn State and whatever, but that's a difficult coaching job. And you're right, relative to expectations coming off a national championship. I think had Michigan lost the national championship and then lost Harbaugh and whatever, he would be given a lot more grace. But if they go like, you know, 6-6 or something like that in the Big Ten, you know, through that Big Ten season, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how Michigan reacts, because, you know, at first I thought they would just kind of coast, but they've been so freaking miserable this off season that they're going to want like a return to form, I think, pretty quickly. And if they don't get it, they might be pretty angry about that. So that would be interesting to see how that plays out. That's a good question from Alvin, and I think a good response from you, because that is a lot of pressure as a first-time head coach. I think that's a lot. All right, so that's Ask Us Anything. Thank you for sending in those questions. Continue sending them, especially in the offseason. We'll keep answering them. Let's talk about a few other things. First of all, Lyle Yost winning a national championship in diving at the 1 meter board. Pretty fantastic. I'll be honest, as somebody who was a swimmer for a long time, I would watch some of the divers and go, what the hell are you guys doing? that seems insane. 1 meter is not too bad. That's fine. But the high divers, like, well, I don't, you're all crazy people, but good for him. That's fantastic.
Yeah, normally sink swimmer, the champions of the pool around Columbus. So nice to get someone else esteemed on the, on the diving team relative to that Olympic masterpiece they've got over at the RPAC.
That's right. Also, another just kind of a quick story here. So Trevor Etienne, yes, related to Travis, was Georgia. So he's got a Georgia player, running back. He had a DUI. He's going to face disciplinary action. Is this just like, is this a requirement at Georgia? Is this like literally part of their prerequisites as a college? Like, do you have to get in some kind of like driving trouble there? Is that it feels like they're doing it intentionally at this point. Like it's something that it has to happen, or
it's hell on wheels in Georgia.
I don't understand what's going on there. And I don't understand why, you know, like Kirby Smart hasn't done something really like come down on the team or so. I don't know. It just, it's crazy that the story keeps popping up over and over and over and over again there.
Well, just, you know, I know many, I made this joke a long time ago in Slack. And I know that, you know, you said a short while ago that your favorite karaoke song is The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Oh, yes, that's right. It is.
And I once changed the lyrics to that, after the last time some news like that broke, to go, Kirby, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, because hell's on wheels in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny trophy made of gold. But if you lose, the devil gets your soul. So they keep winning titles, it won't matter. But, you know.
Well.
Get your, you know, get an order down there, man. Like, it's crazy. They keep getting cited for like going 88-55. It's like all of the players at this point.
I almost feel like there's one section of road in Athens that they're just like, hell yeah, let's do it. They just like, they can't, it's the siren song. Like there's just these like, you know, like these harpies or something that are drawing them toward them with this beautiful alluring, you know, like, you know, melody. And they just have to like floor it every time they get by this place. I live near a stretch of road that's very flat and straight. Big shock in Columbus, Ohio, I know. But we hear like car racing all the time from my house. And there's got to be some place in Athens that they just have to like build in an extra bend in the road or something just to prevent these guys from being the dumbest people possible, because it's insane that it keeps happening. I don't know why it hasn't been addressed in some concrete way. Make them all carpool. I don't know.
I'm glad outside of Terrell Pryor and JT Barrett, Ohio State has been relatively controversy free with these vehicle happenings.
And JT Barrett, you know, like stupid, extremely stupid, but not like an epidemic, right? Like, I mean, come on.
Rick Reichert runs a tight ship around Columbus.
That's right. Real quick, I want to address the rumors that we kind of talked about a little bit. I know it's silly season in the draft process. It feels like it's just done every year out of boredom more than anything else. I did see an article that I thought was kind of interesting where it was talking about Jim Harbaugh, who was trying to gas up JJ McCarthy. And some people were saying, some of the execs were saying, is this just like ulterior motive to manipulate the draft order so that the Chargers get, you know, a more advantageous position or something. If somebody selects a quarterback ahead of them or something like that, they can get the guy that they really want. I don't know how much any of this is actually real or just like guys trying to amuse themselves until they pick the person that they already decided on like 2 months ago. But to me, it feels more like the latter, because if you got a guy like Marvin Harrison who hasn't even bothered to show up for like pro day or the combine, it kind of feels to me like that dude knows where he's going, right? Like despite all of the other chatter otherwise.
I hope so.
I mean, he's going to go. Like, how far do you think it's plausible Marvin Harrison Jr. falls?
I don't see him falling at all, to be honest. I mean, it's,
so you think still top two or three picks?
Yeah, like okay. It would be supremely goofy if he's not the first receiver drafted. I think a lot of it is just noise, but sometimes the noise has a tangible effect, and it stinks because especially watching like the inflation of McCarthy's stock relative to how Stroud got discounted after the combine last year. Yeah. It's disgusting.
And what's really annoying,
it's a consistent theme with Ohio State players.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's really irritating about that is that it's not like, this has nothing to do with McCarthy. I mean, whatever. If people think that he's like some diamond in the rough or whatever, or that he's, you know, a gamer, fine. But whatever you want to see into him, that's totally whatever, I don't care. But what really frustrated me about the whole narrative with Stroud was that it's not like he looked like crap at the combine. He went out and had one of the best combine performances people have ever seen. Yeah. And then they still wanted to go through this whole rigmarole. And it's like, then why is it so performative? Why are we even bothering with all of this if we're just going to, like, you know, just do this crap in the lead up to it to, you know, nitpick or do whatever dumb crap we have. Because
we have like 6 weeks between the combine and the draft, and, you know, we got to come up with like narratives to fill time, you know?
Yeah, I just think it's stupid.
Brady Quinn needs something to talk about.
That's right. Yeah, there's got to be some camp that Marvin Harrison Jr. can blow off and infuriate bad former, you know, quarterbacks.
Relative to Harrison, I would just point to when the guy got snubbed for the Biletnikoff two seasons ago, and the first thing the guy did was that night go out on the practice field and hit the drugs machine, and then follow that up with a Biletnikoff win this season. So yeah, I think
as sure a thing at that position as you're going
to
get.
That, like, so relative to, like, oh, character concerns or whatever, that moment told me everything that I need to know about that guy, particularly as the son of an NFL Hall of Famer who could have very easily coasted on, you know, his name.
Oh, sure, yeah.
He is not done that. And we've even seen that happen
at Ohio State before, right?
No. Where
we had, like, Jerron Carter came in, and you're like, oh, well, this guy's got all the talent in the world, and he did not have the work ethic. He didn't have the mentality that was required to have that level of, you know, success. And when you have a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. come in and just immediately kick ass and be a pro, I think that tells you a lot about his character and what he's going to be able to do in the league. So I'm excited about it. I don't, you know, obviously I want him to fall to the Bengals. That's not going to happen, but that would be cool. but
oh, yeah,
you know,
really need another receiver over there.
Yeah,
right?
I know. No. The Bengals, it's, you know, it's poverty franchise. We gotta get the good players. Come on. They don't have any receivers. What are you talking about? Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out, but I'm kind of with you. I think you might drop a little bit, but I don't see him going much further than like 5 or something like that.
So I just hope the Bears pick Drake May. It'd be very, very funny.
I just want to see.
They go all in on a North Carolina quarterback for like the second time in the last decade.
But that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Like, at this point, because of the shenanigans that they did with Justin Fields and the fact that they like traded him for literally like, you know, 3 beans and, you know, like a quarter, like, I want to see them make the dumbest possible decisions in the draft right now. I want them to see them do the stupidest possible thing because they deserve it at this point. Speaking of,
they could have kept Fields and traded back for Marv and gotten a whole bunch of other stuff. Oh, and I don't understand why the entire league has just decided that Fields isn't worth it suddenly. Like, the guy set NFL records 2 seasons ago, like the season before this last, or not NFL record. Well, no, I think he might have had, I think he broke the record for most rushing yards in a game by a quarterback 2 seasons ago. And he set a bunch of Bears franchise records too. And they never put enough talent around him. They had the opportunity to do that this season. And it's going to be devastating if, like, just for me as an Ohio State fan, it's going to be devastating if Caleb Williams goes into that situation and immediately has success that he's credited
for. Yeah, throws
for
5,000 yards and every, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about 5,000 yards in his, you know, rookie year, but it's they're playing with a lot more talent now between Keenan Allen and DJ Moore than Fields had access to at any point during his tenure there.
Yeah,
so 100%. I'm at least grateful the Steelers take care of their Buckeyes, and I think he's probably going to supplant Russell Wilson at some point, but I'm not happy about how that situation worked out as a Bears fan. And it's, you know, at this point, I'm kind of rooting against them just relative to hoping that because of how they've treated that situation, it would funny to see them fall on their face again relative to making the wrong move, whether it's Caleb Williams or Drake May.
Yeah, totally agree. Last thing, as I kind of alluded to before, we do have the spring transfer portal. Are you worried at all about the rumors surrounding Caleb Downs possibly leaving Ohio State?
What is this? Some kind of April Fool's question? I guess it is April Fool's on the East Coast for another 30 minutes.
Yeah, no, I'm I'm just kind of pulling your chain. I do think it's kind of funny. That's like the last best hope of the Alabama faithful in the past couple weeks that they've been like, oh man.
Oh, Caden Proctor did it, so of course Caleb Downs is gonna do it.
That's
too.
That's right. That's right.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I don't foresee that happening, but I just thought that was a funny thing. I thought I'd bring it up. All right, so that's the Dubcast this week. Thank you so much for listening, sending us your questions, all that kind of other stuff. We'll be back next week to talk a little bit more about Ohio State spring practices, the upcoming NFL draft, all that good stuff, and whether or not any of us got, like, I don't know, like turned inside out by the eclipse. We'll see. I don't know. Anyway, but until then, I'm Johnny.
I'm George.
And we'll see you next
time. Take care, folks.